America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The United States is giving Iraqi leaders now 6 months to come up with a new constitution so elections can be held next year, which would then lead to a U.S. handover of power. That's the latest from Secretary of State Colin Powell during an interview with the New York Times. The revelation comes after President Bush held meetings this week with several world leaders who pressed him for a timetable and a more rapid turnover of power to Iraqis. The story now from correspondent Laurie Iyama.
Secretary of State Colin Powell says the Iraqis have 6 months to draw up a new constitution that would declare either a parliamentary or presidential system, paving the way for elections and a new Iraqi leadership next year. France has urged handing over power to Iraqis within a month. The U.S. says the world will see the Iraqi Governing Council as illegitimate since its members were selected by the U.S. Mr. Powell says the followers of Saddam Hussein would go after an illegitimate government just as they go after the U.S. Mr. Powell says only after the Iraqi elections will the U.S. transfer authority to the Iraqis. Laura Iyama, Washington.
One American soldier was killed in a grenade attack yesterday in the northern Iraqi town of Kirkuk. Two other soldiers from the 73rd Airborne Division were wounded in that attack. In a separate incident, meanwhile, a mortar attack on a market in northeast Iraq killed 8 Iraqis. No American personnel, however, were hurt. About 200 U.S. troops from Iraq arrived this morning at Baltimore-Washington International Airport. They're among the first batch of soldiers stationed in Iraq who are getting to spend 15 days at home as part of the Defense Department's latest rest and relaxation program to boost morale. World Food Program spokeswoman Antonia Paradella says the evacuation of some U.N. staff members from Baghdad won't affect the organization's humanitarian efforts in Iraq.
The bottom line is that there are more than 3,000 U.N. staff working in Iraq, international and nationals, and the work is being done on the ground, and that some people have been relocated to do their functions from other places doesn't mean the U.N. stopped working here.
Paradella says some staff members are staying to ensure food and medical supplies reach the areas they're most needed.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... but on the inside, I'm all... just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. Really, a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved, get the number, and call 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The death toll has now risen to 7 in an overnight nursing home fire in Nashville, Tennessee, happening at the National Health Care Center. One of the victims was the 96-year-old mother of the fire chief there. 30 other residents have been hospitalized. It's still not known what caused the blaze. The do not call list aimed at blocking telemarketers could be tied up in the courts for some time to come still. Yesterday, a second judge blocked the anti-telemarketing registry after Congress had dialed it back in. A U.S. district judge in Denver called the list a violation of the constitutional protections for free speech.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire grilled chicken, fire roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on a fresh baked baguette. All with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
2 days now after the debates between the 5 major California recall candidates, correspondent Steve Fredericks says there's still a lot of disagreement over who came out on top.
The 5 top-ranked challengers in the election to recall Governor Gray Davis didn't stick to the format on Wednesday. The prepared questions were asked, but the candidates soon took pot shots at each other. Sac State policy professor Robert Waste says the emotional negativity probably did independent candidate Arianna Huffington more harm than good.
I think the viewers walked away with 5 good options and taking Arianna off the list, frankly. That's my list. I think they thought that if she couldn't be great in that context, how's she going to take the pressure of a budget?
Waste says those in the rest of the nation who watched the debate were mostly looking for entertainment, and for the most part, he says, they got it. In Sacramento, I'm Steve Fredericks.
Spending for the recall campaign, meanwhile, is up to $50 million now. Arnold Schwarzenegger leading the pack, having raised about $13.5 million. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante has brought in $9.5 million. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Your car coughing, sputtering, riding rough? Think your service center has one magic machine that checks everything? Oh, no. One size doesn't fit all. When I come back, I'll give you the scope. The scoop.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com and keep it close.
Just like in a doctor's office, different diagnostic tools are used for different symptoms in service centers. A scope performs an EKG on your car's electrical system and checks engine functions as it runs, just like a patient on a treadmill. A scanner, on the other hand, talks with car's onboard computers and sensors, like getting a patient history. But if your car has new noises, hard steering, bumpy ride, or vibrating brakes, you don't need a machine test. You need a doctor, a qualified, experienced technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Telling the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Today is Radio Free Friday here. We're broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network, live coast to coast, and a bunch of interesting things for the day. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. Plus, if you have any calls, any thoughts, any suggestions, anything you want to talk about, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And to start Radio Free Friday, number one, our quote for the day. This is from Adam Smith. You know, everybody quotes, the cons love to quote Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, which was published in 1776. I am quite sure that the vast majority of them have never read Wealth of Nations. It's a dense, turgid book. It's really very difficult reading. He wrote that as a doctoral thesis in order to get into university, and there's a whole story around that, but in any case, an earlier book that he wrote that was called The Theory of Moral Sentiments. Oh, actually, A Theory of Moral Sentiments was his doctoral thesis, and Wealth of Nations was another thesis. Anyway, his first one, Theory of Moral Sentiments. And he talks about how actions are more important than intentions. In other words, you can have the most noble intentions in the world, but what do you do? And so our quote for the day comes from section 3.3.5. of Adam Smith's Theory of Moral Sentiments, published in late 1760s. This is something, by the way, that our founders read. And the founders were all very, very familiar with that. Adam Smith, in his day, was like John Grisham today. I mean, he was a well-known, well-read author. Adam Smith wrote, and I quote, our quote for the day, "When the happiness or misery of others depends in any respect upon our conduct, we dare not, as self-love might suggest to us, prefer the interest of one to that of many." End quote. Interesting email I got today from a fellow who bears the name of one of America's most famous scientists. I sent him back an email asking if it was really him, and I haven't heard back, so I'm not going to name the respondent. But this person says, "Dear Tom, are you aware of the anniversary today, September 26th, of a nuclear alarm that almost caused World War III in 1983. This almost led to a planet-ending nuclear holocaust. And after I got this email, Louise checked it out. There's a thing on Common Dreams about it also today. A Russian officer named Stanislav Petrov prevented a massive retaliatory launch in response to the warning of a U.S. missile launch that was, as he correctly guessed, caused by a computer error in the Soviet early warning system. In other words, the Soviet early warning system said, look out, the Americans are sending missiles. And this one guy said, no, it's a mistake, as the entire Soviet army was preparing to launch nuclear weapons at the United States. Keep in mind, they still have about 9,000 of these things, and many of them are still pointed at us, and they're probably still being run by the same computers they had back in 1983. Anyhow, Petrov lost his job and his health as a result of this incident. His wife died of cancer. He just fell apart. But he saved the world on this day in 1983. So, interesting things. I'm sure some of you heard the Democratic debates yesterday. Some interesting points, some really interesting points came out. A couple of things that I thought were fascinating. And we're going to be hearing from Curtis Ellis, our senior political correspondent. Later in the hour, he's going to call in with some thoughts on that. And so I will... Well, let me share a couple of these with you. Just first of all, Al Sharpton kind of set the tone for the introduction of Wesley Clark into the Democratic race. Of course, this was the first debate that Clark had participated in. And Al Sharpton said, welcome to him, more or
well,
less.
First of all, as the only New Yorker, I want to welcome General Clark to New York, and I want to welcome him to our list of candidates. And don't be defensive about just joining the party. Welcome to the party. It's better to be a new Democrat that's a real Democrat than a lot of old Democrats up here that have been acting like Republicans all along.
There you go, Al. You know, a clear dig at Joe Lieberman, I think, there. It was intended to be. And then we had an interesting clip here from Howard Dean. Let's see if I've got it queued up right.
Thank you, Governor Dean.
As governor, I'm an expert in doing things that sometimes people don't like. I actually had the pleasure of serving through both Bush recessions, not one of them. And I had to balance the budget, and during very difficult conditions, we have to balance the budget. That means we have to make unpopular choices. That's why I think we ought to repeal the entire Bush tax cut, so we can, in fact, have health care programs. I also signed a civil unions bill which gave equal rights to gay and lesbian people when only 35% of the people in my state supported it. That's what American people want. They do not want people who are going to promise them everything. What they want is somebody who's going to tell them where they stand.
And then Dennis Kucinich made, I thought, a good summary here.
Three things come to mind. First, I would take action to stop the federal death penalty. Second, I would move to cut the Pentagon budget by 15%, which would in no way affect adversely our national defense, and put the money into child care. Third, I would move to create a Department of Peace, which would seek to make nonviolence an organizing principle in our society and to work with the nations of the world to make war itself archaic.
These were the kind of the high points, I think, in my mind. Joe Lieberman, his comment, it was kind of a... I suppose a funny one here. Let's see if we can catch it here.
In the Bush administration, the foxes are guarding the foxes, and the middle class hens are getting plucked. I want to make clear I said plucked.
Yeah,
roger that.
Yeah, pretty important there. So Joe Lieberman's high point. It was an interesting debate. The more I watch these things, the more respect I have for Carol Mosley Brown. It is. And the more saddened I am, frankly, that in the United States, somebody who is a woman or somebody who is a person of color is so discounted by the press. And, well, I don't need to go into a long rant about this, but it saddens me, because this is a woman who I think has an enormous amount to offer us, And, in fact, the way that she got run out of the Senate was another horror story. Radio Free Friday, second judge knocks down the do not call list. You'll recall a few weeks ago, I mentioned to you that the do not call list, in my opinion, was first of all a stunt and a stalking horse. Now, the reason I said it's a stunt is because, you know, it was something, oh, the politicians, they all jumped on board this thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even the Bush administration could claim credit for it. It was, you know, everybody thought it was wonderful. Yes, we don't want to be called at dinner time. We don't want to have the baby woken up when we're trying to get him to sleep. We don't want to have, you know, elderly people trying to get to the phone in time and falling down and breaking their hips and all these problems that come with telemarketing. And they're real problems. And so the politicians, you know, come riding to the rescue saying, well, we'll solve the problem. Da-da-da. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about a thing. We're going to make it illegal. However, there are a few loopholes. One is that politicians can call. So now you've got 50 million Americans who have put their name on this list. What list do you think the politicians are going to be using to call? Nonprofit organizations can call. And people taking polls can call. So I predict that even if this thing is upheld, number one, the for-profit corporations are going to start calling with polls. Do you use vacuum cleaners? Hi, this is the Acme Vacuum Cleaner Company. I'm calling to find out if you use vacuum cleaners. Oh, you do? Oh, very interesting. Do you think most people would prefer an Acme vacuum cleaner? You know, and somehow the poll will become a sales pitch. We all know about push polls. Push polls are in politics. Where you call up and you say, I'm just calling to find out what you think about the fact that my political opponent has been kicking dogs, and and the person on the other end says, what, he kicks dogs? It's a way of sneaking information in. So there's this exemption for polls, and the other is the exemption for nonprofits. A business that I used to run in Atlanta, it's called the Newsletter Factory. Chandler McDonald, Stout, Schneiderman & Poe is the company. It's an ad agency. Louise and I started it in 1987. We sold it about, 7-8 years ago. It's still there and still running. And one of the things that we did for several years with that business was we did seminars all over the United States on how to do communications, how to do printed communications, how to write, how to design, how to lay out, mostly newsletters. And we trained virtually all of the Fortune 500. I did seminars for the, government agencies, the CIA, the Department of the Navy. I went over to Germany and did it for the Army and military intelligence. We all over the world, we were teaching these seminars. And in the middle of this business, which was a really nice business, it was quite profitable. We charged about $285 a day for, people to show up to these things. And it was good value. We really were teaching people things of value. And in the midst of this, a nonprofit organization decides to get into the act. Now, at the time, we had four competitors. There were four of us that were national seminar companies, and we were all for-profit companies. And this nonprofit group gets in, and they buy up three of our competitors and fold them into this one nonprofit and start mailing to compete with us at the nonprofit rate. Now, we were paying 17 cents a piece to drop a brochure in the mail. We mailed a couple million pieces every year, so we might drop into a city 100,000 pieces of mail to say, we're coming to businesses, just mailed to businesses saying, if you're interested in this workshop. They could, and 17 cents a piece, that's what, $1,700 or $17,000? I don't know. You can do the math faster than me. But anyhow, our competitor now, our nonprofit competitor, could mail at 8.5-9 cents a piece. So they could mail twice as many pieces as we could. And after about 2 years of this, we just threw in the towel and said, we can't compete with a nonprofit. We just can't do it. They're just eating our lunch. And we got out of the seminar business. And I predict that these companies that are doing telemarketing, since there is this loophole for nonprofits, will put together nonprofit front groups like our seminar competitor did, where it looks like the nonprofit educational organization is doing the calling to you. And, in fact, there's a hustle behind it. They're offering something or they're offering information. Companies will start offering free literature, for example, rather than saying, would you like to buy this over the telephone right now? Would you like to receive our brochure in the mail? Once you've done that, then you've established a relationship with them. And the law says that any company that you have a relationship with, you can call as often as you want. So they'll use nonprofits to create, quote, relationships. And then they'll use the relationship to go after this. That's my prediction. But here's where it gets even stranger. This is the most, I think, the most important part of this. And that is that corporations, this judge that just knocked this thing down, said that The do not call list was illegal because it violated the right of free speech of companies. Let me explain about that when we come right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, putting the con back in conservative. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire-Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly. And if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you.
Welcome to the No Spoon
feeding zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, live coast to coast. If you want to drop into our chat room, go to liberaltalkradio.com or tomhartman.com and click on the chat room link. It'll drop you into one of the most interesting conversations on the Internet, always live while we're on the air. Pace Cop got his asterisk back. You'll see some asterisks after some folks. Those are generally our regular members of the forum. A prediction. You heard it here. I am not remembering my Greek history. There was somebody, there was a prophet who was blessed and cursed with the gift of prophecy, and the gift was that when she prophesied correctly, she was absolutely correct, and the curse was that half the time she was wrong, and the problem was you never knew which was which. And I know I'm mangling the story. This is something I vaguely remember from high school or college. Anyhow, here's your prophecy that may or may not be right, but you heard it here first about this upcoming election. Dick Cheney is becoming a liability for George W. Bush. It's becoming increasingly obvious to people on the right, the conservatives and the actual leftover real Republicans are discovering or are realizing that Dick Cheney's fingerprints are all over this war. Dick Cheney and his merry band of neocons, including Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and Pearl, these guys who were formerly corporate CEOs or corporate lobbyists in the defense industries and shills for corporations, large defense corporations by and large. And Cheney, you know, owning 433 stock options and Halliburton stock that's gone up 75% in the last year, while at the same time on Tim Russert he's saying, oh, no, I don't have any interest in Halliburton. No, nothing to worry. It's becoming increasingly obvious to the Republicans that this guy is a problem. And I predict that sometime in the next 12 months, Dick Cheney is going to discover that his health isn't as good as he thought it was. And that in order to spend his last days in Wyoming with his family, a state, by the way, that receives about 10 times on a per capita basis the amount of Homeland Security dollars that New York or California do, in order to retire to Wyoming with his wife and family and take care of, whatever he takes care of and go fishing, Dick Cheney is going to withdraw himself from the Republican ticket, and George W. Bush is going to nominate Rudy Giuliani. And so you'll have Bush and Giuliani on the Republican ticket, which will be a really tough ticket, particularly given the convention, the Republican convention, happening in New York City right around 9/11. And then if my earlier, now this isn't a prophecy or a prediction, but my earlier suspicion that Wesley Clark would leap to the front of the Democratic pack, would get the nomination, and then would ask Hillary to be his running mate so that in 2012 she could run for president. You would see a Bush-Giuliani versus Clark-Clinton lineup, and it really and truly would be a clash of titans. Cassandra. Ah, Steph, yes. I think it was Cassandra. Thank you. Oh, it was a caller. I believe you're right. I believe it was Cassandra. I just don't. I'm going to have to go back and get my history. So we'll find out. We'll find out. Am I Cassandra or not? And breaking news. Joe, our producer down in Atlanta, sends us a quick note here. He says, Joe McPherson, he says, right now there's a protest going on in Georgia regarding a courthouse displaying the Ten Commandments. Two groups have joined forces to support the display, a splinter group from the African American Church and the Ku Klux Klan. They're protesting together at this moment in favor of the Ten Commandments in front of the church. I guess we all can figure out what's up. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Discrimination against female employees of Walmart runs so rampant that a case against the retailer deserves class action status. That's what six female plaintiffs argued before a federal judge in San Francisco yesterday. If the plaintiffs are successful, they'll add over 1.5 million current and former women employees of Walmart to the case. Plaintiffs charge Walmart segregates department employees by gender and routinely favors men over women for raises and promotions. The suit seeks compensation for lost wages and an order to halt discriminatory practices.
Think the U.S. economy is causing pain across the populace? Think again. A new report from the Congressional Budget Office finds that the richest 1% of Americans have more money to spend now than they did 20 years ago. In fact, the top 1% have more money to spend after taxes than the entire bottom 40% of the American population. It's the largest disparity between rich and poor noted by the CBO since it began tracking the trend in 1979. This corresponds well with the release of the Forbes list of the richest 400 Americans. Even though stocks have been pummeled over the last 2 years and most have lost money, those who made the list saw their net worth increase by $955 billion.
Hospitals seeking to do no harm should first hire better trained nurses. That's the conclusion of a new University of Pennsylvania study that shows conclusively that hospital death rates go up as nurse education levels go down. Researchers found that patients undergoing surgery were twice as likely to die of complications in hospitals where the percentage of nurses with four-year bachelor's degrees was lower. A previous report conducted by the same researchers found that inadequate nurse staffing levels also contribute to thousands of preventable deaths each year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name said he had some fresh ideas, but switch now says he came from Texas to Washington.
And welcome back, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Cassandra was the prophet, and my, you know how memory just kind of clears like a fog after a while? This, for those of you who are youngsters, this happens as you get older. And the curse, as I recall, that she had was that she would always prophesy right, but that everybody who heard her would be compelled to not believe her. So, in any case, we don't need to be revisiting Greek history too much here. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have thoughts or questions or comments on this beautiful radio-free Friday here in the United States of America. And we've been touching on a bunch of topics. We started out with the Democratic debates. And last night, our senior political consultant, or political correspondent, Curtis Ellis, was at the debates. And Curtis is on the line. Curtis, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, Tom, it's great to be here. Always a pleasure.
It's always wonderful to have our senior political consultant offer insights and thoughts on this. Now, you and I were talking earlier, and Wesley Clark had made a comment, and I didn't get into this in detail in my early overviews because I wanted to talk with you about it on the air. Let me just play this first, and then we'll discuss it. Okay.
Okay.
We've got this for our listeners here. This is Wesley Clark last night.
We started with a $5 trillion surplus. We went to a $5 trillion deficit projected over 10 years. Now, this administration hasn't had a real economic strategy. All it's had is a tax cut policy. We're faced with a very serious deficit problem. We need to go back to the top 2% and repeal those tax cuts. We need to put all the government spending programs on the table, including the military programs. We need to then have no new programs unless you can pay as you go, and then we need a simpler, fairer, more progressive tax code.
Now, there were a couple of gotchas in there. One was he said putting the military on the table. Can you imagine any other Democratic candidate saying that?
Exactly. He's the only one who can do that, really. Yeah. That struck me. That was amazing.
Yeah,
no one
like
can
Nixon
say, oh, you
China.
Want a weak military. You can't say that to General Clark.
Yeah, yeah, it was like Nixon opening up China. You know, it almost, you know, it took a Republican to talk to the communists. Dwight Eisenhower warning us about the military-industrial complex. I mean, it's ironic that it takes a conservative to credibly warn us about the dangers of conservatives.
Right, right. A couple of other interesting things in that one soundbite. His response: he was asked about economic policy, and he laid it out. As we know, everybody going into this debate saying, well, can he talk about anything other than national security? We know he's an Army guy, but he has no experience in domestic policy, ignoring the fact that he has a degree in economics and something else I'll get to later. It's almost Clinton economics, talking about revisiting the tax cuts, repealing the top bracket tax cut. That's what Clinton did in 93. But the most important thing is the ending, the thing he said at the end. We must have a simpler, fairer, more progressive tax code.
Right.
It's been,
some magic
how long
words
has it been
there.
Since we've heard anybody calling for a progressive tax?
Yeah, well, and the Democrats call for it, but they don't use that word. And I thought his use of simpler and fairer
that's key. Because the Republicans have used, these are code words for Republicans. Republicans have made simpler and fairer code words for a flat tax. He has now negated that. If he sticks to this formulation, I'd be confident to say that this is an effort to take the language back from the Republicans, to make these words mean what they mean, not mean something else. Simpler, fairer, more progressive tax code. I asked
Eureka!
Oh, my God, progressive tax. Wasn't that in the Communist Manifesto, progressive income tax?
Oh, no, we might end up like Canada.
I asked Eli Siegel, who was there. Eli Siegel is one of his people advising him on economic policy. Eli Siegel is part of the Clinton cabal as well. Bruce Lindsey was there, by the way, too, another Clinton cohort. He was there on behalf of the Clark campaign. And I asked Eli Siegel about this, and he said it's no accident. This is the mainstream of Democratic policy. At least it was when Franklin Roosevelt was in power.
Right.
That was very interesting. I think that just jumped right out at me when he said that. Simpler, fairer, more progressive flat tax. That sounds like a slogan, more progressive tax.
Yeah, now it's something I was saying just before you came on the air, and you can tell me if you think I'm nuts or not. Last night we heard a couple of people, I don't recall exactly who, taking swipes at Halliburton. In the previous one, it was Dennis Kucinich. This time, wasn't it Kerry
Graham.
Or Graham? Okay.
Graham. I will give all the money that our troops need, but I'm not going to give one penny in profits to Halliburton.
Right. So I think that Dick Cheney is becoming a liability for the Republicans, and I'm predicting that that Dick Cheney is going to discover that he has health problems, as he has had famously, and that he's going to decide not to run for vice president in 2004, and that George W. is going to pick Rudy Giuliani. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he got the first half right. I definitely sign up. He's going to find a health problem in an undisclosed location, and he's going to have to retire. I don't know about Giuliani. That would be a good move if Bush could pull it off. I'm not sure Giuliani would want to play second fiddle. He might see it as a way to be on board for his presidential run, which people who know him say he definitely wants to do. He wants to be emperor. I mean, president.
Right. You don't think that George would take Jeb as his vice president? That would be too much, wouldn't it? I mean,
along these lines, I was thinking if Clark gets the nomination, he might take Graham as his vice president because he's going to need somebody who knows where the bodies are buried in Florida so that Jeb doesn't pull another 2000 in Florida.
Well, I think Graham will tell him for free. I think if Clark gets it, he's going to take Hillary as his vice president.
Right. Which is a possibility, definitely a possibility. Yeah. Somebody's saying Arkansas, the mother of presidents. This is
strange stuff. What do you think this is going to do to the most progressive of the most viable candidates, which are generally regarded to be, I suppose, Dean and Kucinich? I got to say, by the way, I continue to be so disappointed by John Kerry's positions on trade.
He's
more conservative than Nelson Rockefeller.
He's killing himself. He hasn't seen the light. He doesn't realize what a potent issue this is. It's becoming a mainstream issue that we cannot export jobs. I tell everybody, watch Lou Dobbs' Moneyline on CNN. Lou Dobbs is a tiger
right
on this
winger?
Issue.
That right-winger? That right-winger?
That right-winger, exactly. That right-winger, Lou Dobbs, is doing this series, a special investigation series on, he calls it Exporting America, and it's on the wholesale exportation of jobs. And he is going after these people with a vengeance. He's got Republican congressmen on, trade association people on, trying to defend how it's, you know, good for the American business to send jobs to Bangladesh. And he... and. Dobbs,
he's been talking to Pat Buchanan is what's going on. I mean, Pat or Babe Buchanan got to him then, because, you know, that's Pat Buchanan's big shtick. You know, that's
but even Lou Dobbs is now rejecting the idea that, it's okay if we send jobs overseas because we have such a resilient economy, we're going to create new jobs. We'll just train people for new jobs, better jobs. And Lou Dobbs is saying that's ridiculous. John Kerry hasn't figured that out yet. And this is what I'm waiting to see where Clark comes down on. Clark, by the way, I think he came off very well last night. He did what he had to do, which shows he can talk and smile at the same time and be serious and get out a soundbite. And he was speaking in soundbites. It was amazing. He was speaking in... the other thing that he said, which I thought was very interesting, besides the fact that he mentioned... he was asked about Fannie Mae, about the mortgage lending institutions, which most people probably don't know what it is, and he had an answer for that. Which included he believes in the right of every American to own a home, and whatever happens to Fannie Mae, which seems to be in some kind of trouble, no one's going to be foreclosed. That's what he said, basically. But then he was asked about health care, and he gave a very interesting answer on health care, which is one of those policy issues that will put you to sleep right away, generally. Everybody was talking about a single-payer system, and what he said... What I thought was very interesting is he gave some kind of answer about, you know, we have to do something about health care. And then he said, we need more. I don't know. Do you have the soundbite queued up?
I don't.
Okay, well, then I'll tell you what he said. He said, we have to do more on preventive and diagnostic care. We called it executive wellness in the Army. If we have executive wellness, why can't we have American wellness? What he did here is he represents the Army as an organization that believes in taking care of its own. It provides health benefits, education benefits, pension benefits, affirmative action, and he's saying we do this for our GIs and it makes the Army better. We can do this for all of our citizens and make our country better. That's a very interesting way to look at the Army. I mean, we got this phony G.I. Joe in the White House now who sees the Army as like some kind of Rambo movie. Now, here's a real general who's been in the Army, and he sees the Army as a social welfare organization.
Well, and as a model, I mean, it's interesting. In the Army, the top general cannot earn more than 20 times what the lowest private makes.
Exactly.
And that was a civil service rule for years and years. I think it may still be. It was emulated in universities across the United States. generally either 10 times or 20 times where the trip wires. And in business in the United States, right up until basically the Reagan greed is good revolution, when Reagan Bush came into office, it was very rare that a corporate CEO made more than at the most 50 times what the least well-paid employee made in a company.
That's right. And it was again reinforced by a tax code, which when I was a kid, the top tax bracket was 90%. So, okay, yeah. Even if a company paid you, or if you're a big showbiz personality, and you're getting millions and millions of dollars a year, that last dollar you get, you're only going to see 10 cents of it, because 90% is going to be taken by the federal government. And guess what? People still felt they had an incentive to get up and work. I don't know how that worked. After the greed is good revolution, we were told, oh, no, people won't have an incentive to work if they're not allowed to keep all their money.
Oh, that's the most cynical nonsense. Of all the con arguments that just fall into the category of not making any common sense at all,
right. Is
that if people are taxed too high, they won't want to work. Nonsense. People work because by and large, I mean, there are some folks who work because they show up at 7-Eleven to work. But when you get above a certain threshold, and this is probably the category for virtually all of what you would call the wealthy. When you get above a certain category of income, people are doing it because they're getting job satisfaction out of it.
That's
they're
right,
enjoying
exactly.
It. They're having a good time.
I mean, that other argument is it's the most cynical form of economic determinism. It's almost Marxist economic determinism that people only work for money and material things. If that were the case, Tom, you and I, we'd be on Wall Street because we'd make a whole lot more money over there. And then nobody would become a teacher. Nobody would become a fireman. Everybody would simply go and, do the thing that could make them the most money.
It's one of the biggest cons of the conservatives. So in summary here, Curtis Ellis, our senior political correspondent here on the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network at 14 minutes before the hour. Curtis, what did you think were the... Oh, I had asked you before, what do you think the impact of this thing was going to be on the more progressive end of the party? Are we still going to... might we end up with somebody... You know, is Clark going to move more to the left if he ends up being the nominee? Does Dean still have a chance? Is Kucinich still influencing things? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Kucinich is becoming increasingly, and I know this is going to make a lot of listeners angry. I never thought Kucinich was a particularly viable candidate. He is there to influence the field, and I believe he is doing that. He's doing a really good job, particularly on NAFTA, WTO. That's what he is talking about all the time. Listening to it last night, it almost seemed like he was making that was a mantra, and it was almost his one issue thing.
Yeah.
The peace issue for Kucinich, the party and the field, I hope it gets over it. If it becomes, how did you vote for the resolution issue if the party continues and the candidates still have to look backwards? Look back to last October. How did you vote on this? That's the defining issue. We're all lost. They got to go forward, and they got to go. Let's hope Kucinich can pull the field to the left on this trade issue. Trade and jobs and how American workers are affected by the trade issue, that, I believe, will be a key thing to watch. Dean is still out front, and now we saw that he beat Clinton's fundraising record for an off year.
The newspapers are all, and the TV stations are all telling us that Clark is up front.
Clark is up front, but Dean's up front with money. And I do believe Clark is up front, and especially after last night. Dean's campaign manager, Joe Trippi, said everybody is treating Clark the way they treated Dean at the beginning. They are ignoring him. He's not important. Hmm. They're all now focused on Dean trying to kill him, bash him. Hmm. But Clark, I believe we're going to see. He's got a town meeting tonight in New Hampshire. We'll see how he does there. This guy is moving, and he's got a very slick organization behind him, and they're going to act pretty soon. We're going to see them moving into the almost candidate assumptive role. That's what I predict. They've got a very slick operation, and they're going to treat him like... but, of course, he's going to get the nomination.
Now Brainshrub in our chat room says, what are you talking about? I think Clark did a bad job in the debate. It was all he was doing was talking in sound bites.
Oh, well, yeah. And he didn't have time to do much more than that. I don't want to overplay the whole thing, but all he had to do was not make any big mistakes, and he didn't. make any.
Yeah, because he's got the star thing going, just like Arnold does out in California. I mean, it almost doesn't, you know. And it's really kind of a sad commentary that this is what American politics has come to.
It is a sad commentary, and that's why I don't think Kucinich is really viable as a true nominee. Dean was okay. He's still the man to watch in a way, or the man to beat. Clark is the man to watch. Kerry was a little looser last night, but, you know, the more we see of him, the less we like him. There's no there.
Well, on the other hand, you know, there is some conventional wisdom that don't ever discount a professional politician. That Clark is not a professional politician. He still has the potential to melt down. I mean, look at what happened with Ross Perot. He was the darling of everybody. He was the outsider. He got more votes than anybody since Teddy Roosevelt. But still, he melted down because he really didn't understand economics, or not economics, politics. He wasn't the professional politician. And Kerry
is. That is possible.
We got about 10 seconds here left, Curtis.
Yeah, we got a long way to go.
We've
got a long way to go, so it'll be interesting to watch.
It's good. It definitely is. Curtis Ellis, our senior political correspondent, calling from New York after the debates last night. Curtis, thank you very much for being with us today. Much appreciated. We look forward to your next report. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the pill that will help you escape the Matrix. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah.
If we don't care and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937 on this beautiful Radio Free Friday, and Armand in Florida is on the line. Armand, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much. I'd like to talk about economics quickly. This old argument that they use and they pull out, it was for a different time and a different time period in this country. Not that we shouldn't go back to that time period, but when we were more manufacturing based, that greed's good and all this other, because back, 30, 40 years ago, the chances were very good that if people were affluent and very well to do, it wasn't because of Wall Street primarily or good lawyers or being an insider like the bunch now politically. It was more to do with factory owners, because I'm from an area in the Midwest that I delivered newspapers to factory owners. And the wealthy at that time primarily were people that owned factories that raised a lot of common people up economically to a really good, sustainable middle class. So it was what they're doing now is they're taking that old argument that had more relevance back then, and they're still using it now when these very people that are using it, misusing it, misappropriate.
Which argument is that, Armand?
What?
Which argument are you talking about?
Oh, that greed is good, and wealth is success, and it's something that's sainthood almost. But what they've done is these very people that are misusing that argument that used to have more application and relevance back 40 years ago when it really was more true back then, now they're using it up at this point in time. These very same people that's using the argument now, it's out of its element, and it's wrong and it's deceptive to use that argument now, because these are the very same people that's moved all the factories out of here. And basically what they're doing, they're just transferring what equity's left of the middle class and the wealth to their coffers.
Into their own pockets. Armand, to a large extent, I agree with you, and I appreciate your making the point. But the reality is that this wasn't wise when we were a manufacturing country. And the reality is, the fact is, we could still be a manufacturing company if it wasn't for Ronald Reagan and these crazy trade policies that he undertook of allowing corporations to export our jobs, doing away with tariffs, and then Bill Clinton coming along and signing NAFTA and GATT. This has eviscerated American manufacturing. It's not that suddenly we got bad at manufacturing. It's that labor became a product, a commodity. We'll talk about this more after the break. This is Tom Hartman, Radio Free Friday on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Secretary of State Colin Powell has now announced a new six-month deadline for the interim Iraqi Governing Council to come up with a new constitution for their nation. Powell says that would then clear the way for elections to be held and the introduction of new leadership next year. The New York Times says Powell is emphasizing the U.S. will not transfer authority until that happens. The schedule in response to demands from France and other nations for a rapid shift to self-rule in Iraq. Meanwhile, a rocket-propelled grenade attack late yesterday killed one American soldier in the Iraqi town of Kirkuk. Two others were injured. Also, United Nations officials in Iraq are still pulling people out of the war-torn country. 19 of the remaining 105 workers in Iraq are being recalled now because of concerns over security. But UN press officer in Baghdad, Veronique Thiveau, insists this is just a temporary move.
We are relocating the non-essential staff to the neighboring country because of the situation and because of what happened at Canal Hotel. As you know, we had two bomb attacks, and the security is a real concern for all of us.
Last month, 22 people, including mission head Sergio De Mayo, were killed in a bomb attack at the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad. Another attempted attack this week led to the evacuation announcement. New York Senator Chuck Schumer is calling now for a full investigation into possible espionage in connection with suspected Taliban and Al-Qaeda detainees being held at the naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Schumer says reports of espionage are inexcusable at what he calls the nation's, quote, most sensitive prison.
You have to scratch your head and wonder. This is our most secure base. We have hundreds of Al-Qaeda and Taliban there. And twice we've had arrests for people accused of spying and people who might have an association with terrorism, Al-Qaeda, Taliban.
Schumer says he wrote the Army 6 months ago asking for an investigation into possible espionage there, but says nothing was done. He says he can understand how that might have happened before September 11th, but says he's at a loss now to explain how it could possibly occur during the now full-scale war on terrorism.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all...
Feeling. Whoa, 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 feeling.
Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... You're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
South Dakota Congressman Bill Janklow has a court date today to answer manslaughter and other charges. Last month, Janklow allegedly ran down and killed a motorcyclist. Prosecutors say the 64-year-old was speeding and failed to stop at a stop sign at the rural intersection near his hometown of Flandreau, South Dakota. At least 7 people are dead now and 30 others remain hospitalized following a fire at a Nashville, Tennessee nursing home. It happened overnight. Officials say they do expect the death toll from the blaze to rise. The fire is believed to have broken out on the second floor in a resident's home at the National Healthcare Center.
Welcome to Baguette Country.
Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
U.S. Senator Arlen Specter says he's extremely concerned about OPEC's recent decision to cut oil production. The story from reporter Allison Morris.
Beginning November 1st, OPEC plans to cut oil production by 900,000 barrels a day. U.S. Senator Arlen Specter says that decision comes at a bad time as Americans prepare for winter. And he says on top of driving up oil prices, it's illegal.
The OPEC activities are really a violation of our antitrust laws. Now, they do not have sovereign immunity when they engage in commercial transactions. And I believe this is something we ought to press. We really need know on many lines, you know, that the Saudis are not our friends, and now they're going to lead an international effort to gouge us on oil prices.
Specter says he'll be pushing for congressional antitrust hearings on the matter. I'm Allison Morris in Pittsburgh.
And more than a million Americans sank below the poverty level last year. The numbers coming from a census report being released today. USA Today says it'll be the first time in nearly a decade the poverty rate rose 2 years in a row, growing from 11.7% in 2001 to 12.3% last year. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8, but not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman radio program. Here on the IE America Radio Network, it's Radio Free Friday. Got a lot of topics to talk about, actually, here. A lot of fascinating things. One of the things that I wanted to, just to close out our conversation about the Democratic debate and free trade. I'm gonna share with you this clip, and then I'm gonna go off topic a little bit, and then we're gonna come back to it, to the topic of this of free trade. But here was Al Sharpton's thoughts on American free trade policy.
I think that we cannot have trade policy that overlooks labor, overlooks workers' rights, overlooks environmental concerns. We can't act like just because something is trade that also that makes it right. African Americans are here on a bad trade policy. We're talking about where we are near. We are near an African burial ground. I'm here on bad trade policy. So just because it's trade doesn't mean that it is good and it is something that we should support.
Well said. Very well said. One of the more poignant and salient moments.
And so what is happening with free trade? Was it Armand who called just before the break was saying that, you know, we used to be a manufacturing nation. I would say we still are a manufacturing nation. There are still people manufacturing things in the United States of America. It's just that manufacturing labor in the United States for 200 years was protected from competition by manufacturing labor in other countries by a number of variables. One, the cost of shipping, although the cost of shipping really hasn't changed that much in real dollars over the centuries, but it has dropped somewhat recently. Although with the price of oil going up, it's actually going back up again. But number one, cost of transportation. Another one was that it used to be much more difficult for American corporations to open offices or do business in other countries. I remember times when it was very difficult. Back in the early 70s, I had a company in Michigan that we did a joint partnership, a joint venture with a Japanese company. And at that time in Japan, I could not incorporate a company. The only way that I could do business in Japan was to have a Japanese partner who owned more than 51% of the enterprise. It may still be the case in Japan. I don't know. They're quite protectionist. Although I suspect not, because I believe that they're a signatory to GATT, and they've joined the WTO. But so there were those protections. And then third, every country in the world had tariffs in place, laws in place, taxes in place, basically, that said, okay, if your labor costs $1 an hour and our labor costs $10 an hour, and you want to ship something into our country that has an hour's worth of labor in it, we're going to add a $9 tax to it to level the playing field. And this worked out just fine. Now, there are people who say, oh, but wait a minute, that's unfair to the poor countries. No, it's not. What's unfair to the poor countries, in fact, it's the exact opposite. What's unfair to the poor countries is to say that we're going to start building sweatshops in their countries because their labor is cheap, and provide them with no means to climb up the ladder. Poverty in Mexico has increased since the passage of NAFTA. The toxicity of the air and water in Mexico has increased as a consequence of what we call euphemistically free trade. Yes, there are countries where you have seen bounces as a result of American manufacturing going overseas. It happened in Japan after World War II. It happened in Taiwan, Thailand, South Korea. It's happening right now in China. But at what price? The price is the evisceration of the United States of America. The last time I took an Amtrak train from Vermont here down to New York City, it's interesting because it goes along the rail lines, and the rail lines used to be a primary way of shipping. You know, one of the main ways that goods and services were goods and products were shipped from place to place in the United States, particularly the output of factories. And you see sights that you don't much see along the roadways. And that there's this stretch from Boston to New York where you just go along mile after mile after mile after mile after mile of empty, burned out, broken window, falling down factories that when I was a kid were alive and cooking. So we had a trade policy that kept our jobs and our manufacturing in our country and also allowed for the importation into the United States of those things that we might want enough that we're willing to pay a little extra for. And you say, well, what about, you know, Walmart? I won't be able to buy cheap stuff made in China. Right? You'll have to buy cheap stuff made in the United States, unless there's nobody in the United States willing to make it, which is pretty unlikely. Once the playing field gets leveled, I'm telling you, American entrepreneurs know how to do it. They will take off. Boom! It'll be incredible. You would see an economic revival in America unparalleled if we went back to fair trade policies instead of what is euphemistically called free trade, which really just means free for multinational corporations, you know, feel free to stick it to the American consumer or the American worker in the name of the American consumer. We forget the fact that consumers and workers are the same thing. The reality is that by putting into place the tariffs that we've had in this country since 1784, by putting them back into place, by rolling back the first Reagan-Bush and then the Clinton and then the Bush, by rolling this stuff back and going back to the kind of policies that we had, you would see an explosion in employment in the United States. Yes, it might cost a little more to buy things at Walmart, but are you really going to mind if now you're making $18 an hour with a union job and you've got full health benefits and two or three or four weeks of paid vacation a year? Are you really going to complain that much that the cost of sheets at Walmart went from $6 up to $7? No, prices are not going to double and triple. Labor is not the primary cost in most products. The cost in a T-shirt, for example, as Ben and Jerry demonstrated out in California, the cost of labor to make a T-shirt is somewhere between 5 and 10 cents if you make it in Malaysia or in Burma. If you make it in a union shop in Los Angeles where they pay above minimum wage, they're paying like $10 an hour plus benefits plus vacation time, the cost of labor goes up to 25 cents a shirt. Now, the cons would say, oh, my God, the cost of labor just tripled. It went up fivefold. It went up from 5 cents to 25 cents. That's right. And what does that mean? It means the retail cost of that T-shirt is going to go from $10 to $10.25. Might even go from $10 to $10.50. But now you've got a couple of hundred people who are earning a decent wage. Which kind of world do you want to live in? The world of the cons? This Dickensian world where the rich get richer and labor is just a commodity to be bought and sold. It's a raw material to ravage around. They're just going from country to country like hungry beasts devouring labor. Where's the cheapest labor? Ah, here's some. We'll use this. And then when it doesn't get cheap anymore, like in Taiwan and Thailand and South Korea, I was in those countries when they started melting down in the 90s. And I can tell you, it was not a pretty sight. And why did they melt down in the late 80s and throughout the 90s? Because China came along and said, hey, you know, because the manufacturers there, people were making enough money that they were starting to say, hey, we would like health care. We'd like vacations. We'd like a higher wage. And the manufacturers said, hey, forget this. And they went to China and Burma and Malaysia and Vietnam and eventually... What you have with this free trade for corporations policy is a great leveling of the entire planet. And there are some who would say, well, that's a marvelous social ideal, isn't it? A great leveling? No, it's not. It's absolutely not. Because, first of all, it assumes that everybody in the world should have the exact same kind of economy that we have. And there are many parts of the world that don't and shouldn't. They have agriculturally based economies, for example. In many cases, they don't even use money. I've been in parts of India where people use no currency at all. They're entirely barter. These tribal regions in western India, near Rajahmundry, where it's entirely, and not just there, I've been in parts of Africa that are like that as well. There are parts of North and South America where barter is used more often than cash. So the assumptions are wrong here. The assumption that everybody should be just like us, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? That kind of culturalism is the iron fist beneath the velvet glove that we are using to crush the rest of the world, and that is being now used to crush the middle class of America for the benefit of transnational corporations who buy and sell our politicians. And that's what it boils down to, folks. That's the conservative agenda. The conservative agenda is about cheap labor. It's just another commodity. And in a liberal democracy, as envisioned by the founders of this United States, our social goals, what kind of world, the answer to the question, what kind of world do we live in, is more important than the answer to the question, can this person make more money at the expense of the rest of us? Yes, of course we want people to be able to make money. Of course we want people to be able to earn a good profit. We had that throughout the 50s and 60s and 70s in the United States, in the 40s, with a top tax bracket in the 90%. Kennedy dropped it down to the 70% because there were so many loopholes, but it didn't change anything of any consequence. And now we see this incredible change. And now Now, oh. The New York Times on Tuesday of this week, for each dollar of tax cuts, you and I, according to the Congressional Budget Office, for each dollar of tax cuts, we're going to have to pay back $3.60. Why? Because there's interest. We're borrowing money. From 2001 to 2006, as the New York Times, Americans will get tax cuts that average $3,593 a person, while the per capita share of the national debt will increase by $13,000 per person. About a fourth of this year's record budget deficit, estimated at $480 billion, of finance tax cuts. The mounting interest expenses squeezes out financing for purposes other than other purposes. In other words, it's harming our economy, such as mortgaging a home, paying for vacations. Well, the analogy they make is that if you live on a credit card, eventually you reach the point where you can't even pay your mortgage. It's the same thing is happening here with this government. The fiscal policies of the Bush administration are nuts. The conservatives don't understand basic economics, and these bumper sticker slogans. They're trying to shove this down our throats, this rich gets richer economics that just leaves everything a wasteland except for a very few very rich. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol?
Yes, Ms. Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Time to take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. There's so much attention these days on the new rich, those hotshots who became overnight millionaires, that we too often overlook the old rich, who lived generation after generation on some fortune amassed in the distant foggy past by great-great-great-great-great-grandfather greed. How are they doing? Not so well, according to the Earl of Sandwich, scion of one of Britain's most upper-crust families. There's no real security in being from an old family anymore, says the Earl ruefully. What with the skyrocketing costs of maintaining mansions, keeping servants and whatnot, even some of the landed gentry find it hard to make ends meet. I know you can feel their pain. Snicker if you will, but the Earl, who is the 11th in the royal line of Sandwiches, is a serious chap. He's in the House of Lords, and is the latest in a continuous line of Sandwiches to serve in the Parliament since the 1660s. The most famous, of course, was Earl IV, who allegedly invented the sandwich during an all-night gambling session. Refusing to break for dinner, he slapped a chunk of meat between two bread slices, and voila, the rest is culinary history. But you can't eat history, and alas, today's sandwich family needs to make a living, So, in an entrepreneurial burst, the 11th Earl recently decided, Eureka, we'll start a sandwich business. He notes that he has long been bothered by the poor quality of British sandwiches. The food, not the family. And who better than he to set a proper standard? Hence, a new line of fresh packaged sandwiches, upscale of course, bearing the family name and crest on the package. He's even planning an Earl of Sandwich Cafe in Disney World. How appropriate. This is Jim Hightower saying, it just shows you can't keep a good sandwich down. But I don't think that'd make a good marketing slogan.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the day from Adam Smith, his theory of moral sentiments. Adam Smith, the author of Wealth of Nations back in 1776. When the happiness or misery of others depends in any respect on our conduct, we dare not, as self-love might suggest to us, to prefer the interest of one to that of many. So back to this New York Times piece here. In this report, the 26 million taxpayers in the middle rungs of the income ladder, those making $28,000 to $45,000, are especially hard hit by federal borrowing. Each dollar of tax savings, keep in mind, George Bush calls this tax savings. The cons call this a tax cut. It's not. It's a tax postponement plus interest. Each dollar of tax savings for this group, that's people making $28,000 to $45,000, 28 million people, each dollar of tax savings for this group is accompanied by $6.55 of increased federal debt. Only the top, I'm quoting now from the New York Times, an article by David K. Johnson, studies say tax cuts now will bring bigger bill later, September 23, New York Times. Only the top 1% income group comes out ahead, the analysis found. Each dollar of tax cuts for the top 1% is offset by just 77 cents of added federal debt. For this group, the tax cuts over 6 years that are worth $236,299 a person on average, while their share of the extra federal debt averages $182,725. You get it? You get the conservative agenda? The lies that that these right-wing talk show hosts are feeding people? Oh, yes, only the rich pay the taxes, and so of course they should get the biggest tax break. It's not a tax break. Well, they pay so much taxes, they should get a tax cut. It's not a tax cut. We are borrowing money from the future in order to hand cash gifts to those people who donate money to Republican campaigns. That's the bottom line. And who's going to pay that money? Disproportionately, it's going to be those people in the middle. If you earn between $28,000 and $45,000 a year, for every $1 that was handed to wealthy people in the Bush tax cuts, which aren't cuts, they're deferrals, they're postponements, they're borrowings, for every dollar, you who pay between $26,000 and $45,000 a year are going to have to pay $6.55 in interest. Not to mention the principal. It's time to wake up. It's time to start talking back. When you hear anybody on the radio or television talking about tax cuts, send them an email. Call them up and say, these are not tax cuts. I'm sorry. You can't have a tax cut unless there is either a surplus or a balanced budget, and you reduce spending by the same amount. Otherwise, you're borrowing money and giving it to people. And you're deciding who you're going to give it to. And Bush decided in this case that he would give a couple hundred dollars to average folks, and he would give millions to his buddies. And he borrowed it, and he borrowed it from you and from me and from our children and from our grandchildren. And that's the bottom line. And he was hoping he could stimulate the economy by borrowing that money. And yes, there will be some stimulus from it, because if I give you a credit card with a $1 million credit limit and say, hey, let's see if you can look like you're prosperous, you can certainly do it. Does it mean that you've generated prosperity? No! This is the destruction of the middle class in America, burdening us with this kind of debt. We cannot tolerate this, my friends. We cannot tolerate it. Putting the con back in conservative. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The North America encountered by Lewis and Clark 200 years ago was a land of unimaginable abundance. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When Lewis and Clark set out on their westward expedition in 1804, one of the questions they sought to answer was, what kind of place was the Great Plains? Gary Moulton is the editor of the Lewis and Clark Journals. He says people in the East had heard a variety of descriptions of the western grasslands.
Was it the Great American Desert, or was it the garden in the wilderness? And Lewis and Clark came back with a garden image of the Great Plains because of the abundance of wildlife.
Moulton says Lewis and Clark made note of the low rainfall, lack of trees, and short grasses, but they were stunned by the animals.
Often they talked about the great herds of buffalo and elk and deer. You know, buffalo that they would have to sort of knock out of the way to get by them.
They also describe a Missouri River teeming with mussels and fish.
They were amazed with the number of fish they were catching. Sometimes they'd put out a net and haul in 300, 800 fish at a time. So the abundance of the country was just something that really caught their attention.
Moulton says that abundance fell off as the expedition entered the Rocky Mountains, where game was scarce.
Our conception is always the plains as sort of boring, monotonous landscape, whereas the mountains are beautiful and scenic and prosperous. For Lewis and Clark, it was almost entirely the different attitude. The plains were the place of abundance.
That's historian Gary Moulton, editor of the Lewis and Clark Journals. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn the world into one big
one big Texas.
For the rest of us, broadcasting live from high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We have an award for this. Well, actually, I'll get to that in just a second. First, I want to give away a book. We have, I believe they're autographed copies by Jim Hightower of his book, Thieves in High Places. Jim Hightower's marvelous new book, Thieves in High Places. And which I highly recommend. And if you don't have a copy and you'd like to get a copy, be the first person to call with the correct answer to this question. And here's the question. Which of the following five people made this statement? Now, here's the statement. I'd put my money on the sun and solar energy. What source of power? I hope we don't wait till oil and coal run out before we tackle that. Now, who said that? Was it Ralph Nader? Was it Thomas Edison? Was it Jimmy Carter? Was it George Herbert Walker Bush? Or was it Teddy Roosevelt? I'd put my money on the sun and solar energy. What source of power? I hope we don't wait till oil and coal run out before we tackle that. The person who is the first caller with the correct answer to our number 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, will receive a copy of Thieves in High Places by Jim Ty Hightower. And if you'd like to come on the air and give us the correct answer, that's great. And if you're a shy person and would rather not, that's fine too. You can also call and win. Now, that said, and while Stephanie is frantically dealing with the telephone and all the calls that are coming in, as they usually do, I have an award here. We try to get one of the wonderful lessons that I learned in managing businesses over the years, and for that matter, having kids, was that it's always better to catch people doing things right than doing things wrong. It is so much more useful if you can catch. If you remember the Boy Scout slogan, do a good deed every day. It's like if you can. There's really some truth to that. It's really, in fact, the pre-1960s Boy Scout thing was do a good deed every day. And the definition of a good deed is something you do that nobody ever knows you did, including the recipient. Those are really hard to find. To find one of those every day. Anyhow, we want to catch people doing things right, and so ta-da, we have caught somebody doing something right. Yes, indeed, folks. Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich has introduced a bill into the United States Congress called the Benjamin Franklin True Patriot Act. And Dennis Kucinich's law would repeal sections of the USA Patriot Act that authorize sneak and peek searches, warrantless library, medical, and financial record services, and the detention and deportation of non-citizens without meaningful judicial review. Beyond the Patriot Act, the bill also cements the fundamental right of attorney-client privilege and restores transparency in the Department of Justice and Homeland Security by revoking FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, secrecy orders, along with other important provisions. As Dennis Kucinich said, and I quote, after September 11th, Americans did not authorize the deterioration of the First, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendments. This is supported by the ACLU and many others. Again, the question, I'd put my money on the sun and solar energy. What source of power? I hope we don't wait till coal and oil run out before we tackle that. Who said it? Ralph Nader, Thomas Edison, Jimmy Carter, George Herbert Walker Bush, or Teddy Roosevelt? Thanks again to Dennis Kucinich. He's our jolly good fellow of the hour. So, anyhow, while we're waiting for a winner to our contest, I want to get into back into this economic stuff. This is, I think, pretty critical stuff. And I want to share with you just one little clip here. This was recorded. This was actually the New York Times carried this on their website. This was recorded by somebody as part of a conference call at IBM Corporation. And this consultant is telling a bunch of management people in this conference call a few of the facts of life. By the way, Kevin in South Lake Tahoe, California, is our winner of the contest, so you can stop calling Stephanie. And the answer to the question is, first of all, the question, who said I'd put my money on the sun and solar energy? What source of power? I hope we don't wait till oil and coal run out before we tackle that. Who said it? Was it Ralph Nader, Thomas Edison, Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush, or Teddy Roosevelt? It was, born in 1847, died in 1931, Thomas Edison. So, Kevin, congratulations, and I hope you enjoy the book. I hope you enjoy it very much. Now, back to today's realities. Well, that certainly is one of them. But in any case, back to our discussion here. This is from this conference call, this IBM conference call. Let me just share a couple little pieces of this with you.
I've got the numbers there. Forrester Research says that by the year 2015, we're going to see over 3 million U.S. jobs move offshore. So this...
Did you get that? Forrester Research says 3 million U.S. jobs. Let me just give you this.
I've got the numbers there. Forrester Research says that by the year 2015, we're going to see over 3 million U.S. jobs move offshore. So this is certainly something that is worth catching our attention.
This is worth catching our attention. Now, what kind of jobs are those that IBM is talking about moving offshore? Now, keep in mind, this was several months ago that this telephone conversation was intercepted.
We're looking at an emerging trend now to move services offshore in addition to manufacturing operations.
See, this is the bottom line. People say, well, we're not a manufacturing country anymore. Nonsense! Lies! We are still a manufacturing company. We still have the ability to manufacture. What has happened is that we have torn down the traditional protections, that have protected American workers. A system of tariffs and bilateral agreements that said, okay, trade is good. International trade is good when it works to the benefit of people on both sides of the equation. Adam Smith talked about in Wealth of Nations in 1776, that if England makes good sweaters and France makes good cheese, but the English make lousy cheese and the French make lousy sweaters, then they ought to trade with each other so they can both have cheese and sweaters. That's the purpose of good free trade. The purpose of free trade is not so that the corporations that make the sweaters or the corporations that make the cheese can have higher profits. Don't you get it? Well, I think you do, of course. Pardon me, I'm not yelling at you. I'm yelling at those idiots that I hear on the radio going, well, it's all about free trade. It's going to help everybody. Yeah, we did lose a couple million jobs here and there. And even Bill Clinton doesn't get this. Or maybe he does, but he's so in debt to his corporate buddies. And this is the mantra of the Democratic Leadership Council. Let the corporations go wherever they want, wherever the labor is cheapest. Sorry, free trade, that is free for corporations, free for all for corporations, trade is one of the most destructive things to human beings. You had, in the last 3 months in the United States, we had 440,000 people declare bankruptcy. Can you imagine how many suicides came out of that? Can you imagine how many broken families came out of that? How much divorce came out of that? How many abused children came out of that? How many homeless people came out of that? The social, physical, can you imagine how many people got depressed? Their immune systems were suppressed. They got sick. Can you imagine the disaster that is coming out of this economy? As a consequence of saying, yes, it's appropriate, free trade, it's appropriate that American workers should compete with Malaysian workers. Let's be noble. We have to do this to help the Malaysians. It doesn't help the Malaysians. It doesn't help the Americans. It doesn't help the Malaysians. All it does is make transnational corporations rich and funnel millions of dollars into the pockets of the politicians that make it possible. That's all it does. Come on, I dare you, I defy you to prove me wrong. You know it. You know it. Just a little bit of thought. The cons want to, you know, they've got these bumper sticker slogans. But I'm telling you, you know, Ross Perot was right. That giant sucking sound. We've been hearing it ever since Bush Sr. was elected and started whacking away at this stuff. Ross Perot was right, at least on some things. So anyhow, we got these guys at IBM, and they're talking about, let's just listen one more time. This is so important, my friends, because this is the conversation. People think, well, you know, it's... I can't get a manufacturing job anymore because we don't do manufacturing in the United States anymore. Suddenly we got bad at it. Nonsense. But we do do services good. We do software engineering. I could go back to college and learn to be a software engineer. I could do sales. I could do customer service. I could work on the telephone. I can work in a cubicle. I can just go back and get retrained. Listen to the conversation that corporate America is having.
We're looking at an emerging trend now to move services offshore in addition to manufacturing operations. Some functions that would be included in those services would be engineering. Harry mentioned software development, certainly chip development as well. Services like accounting and financial services. There are companies that realize that there are lots of skills in places like India to do accounting for a fraction of what the costs are in the U.S. Call centers. Once we realize that we could have calls handled at a central location in the U.S. and a central location in Europe, next question is why should only be continent by continent? Why not go further there? IT support and services, similarly. Why do you have to talk to someone in your own country? Call center stuff. It's an interesting market focus group research going on the like as to what U.S. customers prefer in terms of accents and what they don't like and what countries are good places to put call centers, what places aren't.
And this, they get into this whole thing about in India they speak English that sounds kind of British, and so Americans don't mind the call centers, and you give them anglicized names and make them think that they're talking to somebody in the United States or maybe at the very worst somebody from Ireland or something. Now, I bring this up because in the news today was this Associated Press story from Armonk, New York. Keep in mind, the conversation you just heard was from several months ago, IBM Corporation, and here's the story. IBM Corporation is cutting 400 jobs in its software division, leads the story. Affected employees were notified Wednesday and will have a month to find other positions within the company. If they can't sign on elsewhere, they will be let go with severance. And then the kicker, the last paragraph. IBM shares rose 1%. To close at 89.41 in trading Thursday on the New York Stock Exchange. Their stock went up. Now, at the same time, in today's Wall Street, in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, here's an article. India's elephantine economy may be poised to run. You know, making a pun about the fact that they still have elephants in India. Economists ratchet up forecasts as consumers and businesses spend more. This is an article by Jay Solomon in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. New Delhi. Is India finally set to join China as a powerful new economic growth engine for Asia? See, you get it? Our manufacturing jobs went to China. Our service and engineering jobs are going to India. Judging by the speed at which economists are ratcheting up growth estimates here being in India, it certainly looks that way. Jay Solomon goes on to write, India's emergence could be one of the world's most important economic trend stories over the next two decades. He adds, George Bush says, hey, we got to give this money, we got to borrow money from our children and our grandchildren. $5.66 for every middle class dollar that we borrow in interest. We got to borrow all this money and pay all this interest. In order to give this money to rich people so that they'll invest it and create jobs. Remember that? Do you remember that? Do you remember this scam?
With a robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Absolutely right. You will create 1 million new jobs. Those tax dollars that you're giving back to the rich people, they are going to invest. And those investments are going to produce jobs. Where? In India! Here we are, the Wall Street Journal yesterday. India's elephantine economy may be poised to run. India's emergence could be one of the world's most important economic trend stories over the next two decades. International portfolio investors have poured $3.65 billion into Indian equities so far this year. Up from $763 million for all of 2002. All of 2002, less than $1 billion. And so far in the first 9 months of this year, almost $4 billion of international funds have gone into the Indian stock market. Where do you think it's coming from? Where do you think it's coming from?
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief.
Yeah, sure enough. And they go on to say, helping the country's main index rise by 50% since last April. India's stock market has gone up 50% since April. They continue. Jay Solomon in this article in the Wall Street Journal. Blue chip U.S. investment houses such as Warburg Pincus, Citibank's private equity arm, and Carlyle Group are among those who have recently bought stakes in Indian companies. And on it goes. Oh, they also point out the government is currently is holding $85 billion in foreign reserves, and India is running a healthy current account surplus. What that means is India is selling more than it's buying. So they're ending up with cash left over, unlike the United States, which is buying more than it's selling. So we're ending up in debt and having to give away parts of our nation. Right now we're giving away, we're selling our debt to other countries. Almost two-thirds of our debt to foreign investors who now have our economy by the throat. This is not good for America, my friends. This is not good for the world. It's not good for India. It's not good for anybody except the transnational corporations and the puppet politicians they control. That's it. Radio Free Friday here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the true people's radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
I have a headache. I will take Tylenol now.
It's easy to forget sometimes. You don't have to do things the same way over and over. You have a choice.
I always take Tylenol.
But you could take Advil. Advil Liquigels are proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
I need data.
Clinical tests prove it. Advil Liquigels, advanced liquid-filled capsules, rush relief where you need it.
So I have a choice. I can choose Advil.
When was the last time you rethought your pain medicine? For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
see the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
This
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
News without conflicts of global corporate interest. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. U.S. income gap widening. This from the New York Times, an article by Lindley Browning. The gap between rich and poor more than doubled from 1979 to 2000. From the beginning of the Reagan-Bush regime to the current Bush regime, an analysis of government data shows the gulf is such that the richest 1% of Americans in 2000 had more money to spend after taxes than the bottom 40%. The top 1% income group had the largest share of before-tax income for any year since 1929. Which reminds me, some people will say, oh, the Great Depression, that was caused by Smoot-Hawley. Smoot-Hawley was a law that imposed some tariffs. Those things I've been talking about, hey, let's protect our domestic industries. And it did, in fact, slow down trade between the United States and the rest of the world. But do your research. Smoot-Hawley accounted for less than 3% of the total economic downturn in the United States. And in fact, those kinds of tariffs, once the government started recovering from that economic disaster, those tariffs were one of the things that saved our butts. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and we have Kevin in South Lake Tahoe. Oh, I'm sorry, Kevin was the caller. We got Mark in Dallas on the line. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I really appreciate your discussion this morning about the trade issue, and I wanted to add something that I don't think you've mentioned.
Okay.
From a June 14th article, 2003, in the Times of India. I'll read just briefly here. The Indian government.
Only got about a minute, Mark.
Okay, the Indian government and businesses have won a major assurance from the Bush administration on the issue of outsourcing. A senior U.S. official has said Washington is against any attempt by state governments to legislate a ban on outsourcing on the lines of what is being considered in New Jersey and other states. The official, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Zoellick, gave this assurance in course of 3 hours of intensive talks with Indian Commerce Minister Arun Jaitley. The Bush administration supports outsourcing of good American jobs overseas.
And that published in the Indian Business Journal. Amazing. Mark, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate the call, and it's not at all, it's unfortunately, sadly, tragically, it's not at all surprising. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Nosepads, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Secretary of State Colin Powell has now announced a new six-month deadline for the interim Iraqi Governing Council to come up with a new constitution for their nation. Powell says that would then clear the way for elections to be held and the introduction of new leadership next year. The New York Times says Powell is emphasizing the U.S. will not transfer authority until that happens. The schedule is in response to demands from France and other nations for a rapid shift to self-rule in Iraq. Meanwhile, a rocket-propelled grenade attack late yesterday killed one American soldier in the Iraqi town of Kirkuk. Two others were injured. Also, United Nations officials in Iraq are still pulling people out of the war-torn country. 19 of the remaining 105 workers in Iraq are being recalled now because of concerns over security. But UN press officer in Baghdad, Veronique Chavot, insists this is just a temporary move.
We are relocating the non-essential staff to the neighboring country because of the situation and because of what happened at Canal Hotel. As you know, we had two bomb attacks, and the security is a real concern for all of us.
Last month, 22 people, including mission head Sergio De Mayo, were killed in a bomb attack at the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad. Another attempted attack this week led to the evacuation announcement. New York Senator Chuck Schumer is calling now for a full investigation into possible espionage in connection with suspected Taliban and Al-Qaeda detainees being held at the naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Schumer says reports of espionage are inexcusable at what he calls the nation's, quote, most sensitive prison.
You have to scratch your head and wonder. This is our most secure base. We have hundreds of Al-Qaeda and Taliban there. And twice we've had arrests for people accused of spying and people who might have an association with terrorism, Al-Qaeda, Taliban.
Schumer says he wrote the Army 6 months ago asking for an investigation into possible espionage there, but says nothing was done. He says he can understand how that might have happened before September 11th, but says he's at a loss now to explain how it could possibly occur during the now full-scale war on terrorism.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all...
Feeling. Whoa, 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 feeling.
Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... You're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. a public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
South Dakota Congressman Bill Janklow has a court date today to answer manslaughter and other charges. Last month, Janklow allegedly ran down and killed a motorcyclist. Prosecutors say the 64-year-old was speeding and failed to stop at a stop sign at the rural intersection near his hometown of Flandreau, South Dakota. At least seven people are dead now and 30 others remain hospitalized following a fire at a Nashville, Tennessee nursing home. It happened overnight. Officials say they do expect the death toll from the blaze to rise. The fire is believed to have broken out on the second floor at a resident's home at the National Health Care Center.
Remember that scholarship you were hoping for to help pay for your son's college?
Hey, Bill, your kid's running the wrong way.
Well, I wouldn't count on it. But there is something you can count on. We're College Loan Corporation, a company dedicated to helping you finance or refinance your college education with interest rates as low as 2.63%. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE today and find out how you can take advantage of the lowest interest rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
U.S. Senator Arlen Specter says he's extremely concerned about OPEC's recent decision to cut oil production. The story from reporter Allison Morris.
Beginning November 1st, OPEC plans to cut oil production by 900,000 barrels a day. U.S. Senator Arlen Specter says that decision comes at a bad time as Americans prepare for winter. And he says on top of driving up oil prices, it's illegal.
The OPEC activities are really a violation of our antitrust laws. Now, they do not have sovereign immunity when they engage in commercial transactions. And I believe this is something we ought to press. We really know on many lines that the Saudis are not our friends, and now they're going to lead an international effort to gouge us on oil prices.
Specter says he'll be pushing for congressional antitrust hearings on the matter. I'm Allison Morris in Pittsburgh.
And more than a million Americans sank below the poverty level last year. The number's coming from a census report being released today. USA Today says it'll be the first time in nearly a decade the poverty rate rose 2 years in a row, growing from 11.7% in 2001 to 12.3% last year. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8, but not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations, on the Sirius satellite radio system, and also on various web stations that simulcast this stuff. Radio Free Friday today. If there's anything you want to talk about, give us a call, 1-800-825-5937. That's 1-800-TALK-YES, for those of you who can see well enough to see those little letters on the keys on your telephone, an ability that I seem to have lost. U.S. soldiers fired on a car Thursday belonging to the American news agency Associated Press. This is actually a story from last week.
But it's interesting, U.S. soldiers firing on the AP, and then we had, this has, of course, happened quite a bit, not just U.S. soldiers, but mostly coalition forces have been the ones who have killed reporters, sadly and unfortunately, and I'm not positing a conspiracy or accusing anybody. It's just, you know, this is one of those tragedies of war. And then the coalition, or the governing council, the Gang of 25, handpicked and appointed by the United States to rule Iraq, who now, by the way, Ahmed Chalabi in New York last week says, on George's big day, says, we're going to ask that sovereignty be handed over to us right away, and we'd like to have access to the cash, and we'd like to have control of the oil. And the Bush administration says, we don't think that's such a good idea, really. It's probably not, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain there. It's and that Chalabi story, it's interesting. It was in the paper one day, the day of Bush's UN speech, and then it vanished. Chalabi said that he was going to testify before Congress and ask them to speed this stuff up. Maybe it happened. I don't know. Maybe I just don't read the newspapers thoroughly enough. But I have a feeling that somebody told him that if he values his future, he better shut up and get back to Iraq, that he's supposed to be there as a decorative ornament in the United Nations, not as a national leader. Now, interestingly, remember the whole story about the guy down in Guantanamo Bay who got arrested? I had the news story this morning. I don't think I have it with me right now. No, I don't. I left it out in the other room. Anyhow, the news story about the guy who is being charged with espionage he was a Muslim among Muslims. He was an American soldier, and he had classified information on his computer. And now they're talking about espionage and all this stuff, and it just occupied the news cycle for 24 hours after Bush's speech to the United Nations. Blew off the air all the critical mentions of Bush's speech before the United Nations. Blew off the air any kind of analysis of what Kofi Annan or Jacques Chirac had to say. Blew off the air the fact that every major newspaper in the world, except those in the United States, editorialized against George W. Bush. Blew off the air the fact that Ahmed Chalabi was saying, hey, we'd like some of that oil and some of that money, and we can actually rebuild Iraq cheaper than Halliburton can. All these stories got blown off the air by the release by the Rove administration, the Karl Rove administration, of this story of this guy down in Guantanamo Bay who was a spy. Interesting timing, isn't it, when you consider that this guy was arrested back in June. This happens so often with this administration. They will do something. You know, they'll have an arrest. There'll be an event. You know, something goes on. And they sit on it for a few months until they get a bad news day. And then, boom, they pull this thing out of the hat, and suddenly everybody in the news, everybody in the press, oh, no, look at that. Isn't that incredible? This guy's a spy. I believe it was June 24th. As I said, I don't have the story right in front of me, but it was in this morning's paper. Amazing. So anyhow, we've got these U.S. soldiers fired on this car. We've got the Iraqi government that it is, talking about, you know, the Gang of 25, talking about how they'd actually like to have some real power, thank you very much. And in the midst of this, they said, and by the way, you know, this free speech stuff, this democracy stuff, we're not sure that's such a good idea. That might work okay in the United States. You know, Fox News is free to say whatever they want. whether it's true or not, and they'll have these weasels on, and they'll tell lies to people. That's okay in the United States, but we can't have that happen here in Iraq. We can't have news that might inflame people. And so Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, as I recall the name of the second one, both got thrown out of the country, banned for 2 weeks, and most likely permanently. We'll see if there's an uprising. And the day after that's announced, and that what put two and two together for me, by the way, was in our chat room yesterday. I got to tell you, you really want to know what's going on in the world, check out our live chat room that runs while this program's on the air. Just go to TomHartmann.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com and click on the chat room link. It takes you into the New Age Forum on CompuServe, which is just it's a great place, but it's got this chat room shell that we use. And you can drop in there and have a conversation with some of the greatest minds in America, in my opinion. And one of the folks in there yesterday said, have you noticed that the day after the Arab news media get thrown out of Iraq, NBC's hotel gets bombed? Conspiracy or coincidence? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you'd like to call in on Radio Free Friday, and Sarah in Santa Fe is on the line. Sarah, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Hi, Tom. Just wanted to say that I have heard the theory that the Muslim chaplain who's being accused of spying, it's possible that he's a whistleblower concerning the conditions that the prisoners at Guantanamo are being kept under. Certainly the items that they've reported him that he was caught with could go either way. I mean, we don't have all the information, obviously. But they could be items that he was collecting, you know, information on the situation there in order to expose conditions.
Oh, my God.
So I don't know.
That's just one of the theories that's going around. Yeah, it had not even occurred to me.
Yeah,
and
so I just thought I'd just throw that out there for anybody to chew on. So, you know.
Yeah, Sarah, you're brilliant.
Well, no, I've heard it from other people, and
you have.
I think it's deplorable. I think that what we're doing in Guantanamo is it's going to come back to haunt us.
Yeah, concentration camps are not good, you know, wherever they are. Concentration camps are not good.
That's right.
And this one built by Halliburton, of all people.
That's right.
It's not good for the reputation of America. It's not good for the people of America. It's not good for American democracy. And it's frankly, it's a lousy way to even conduct interrogations and get information from people. It's just
shameful. It's shameful.
Yes.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate the call. When we brutalize any, we brutalize all of us. I think Steph isn't running the board anymore, but whoever's running the board, when Sarah came on, I had a huge echo in my ear, so maybe you need to reboot the telephone equipment. Anyhow, here we have Colin Powell speaking in Cairo. Powell now is dancing a new tune. This is from Reuters. September 25th, yesterday. Secretary of State Colin Powell tried on Thursday to explain away remarks on Iraq dating back to the beginning of the Bush administration before the United States decided to move against Iraq. Here's what Powell said yesterday. What Powell said yesterday was, I didn't change my assessment. I did not say he didn't have weapons of mass destruction. End quote. And here's what Powell said back in Cairo, back in February of 2001, or back in March of 2001. It was in February of 2001. He was in Cairo at a Middle East summit. And he said, and I quote, and by the way, you can find this on the State Department's website. On the State Department's website, there's a transcript of the February 2001 meeting between Colin Powell and Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. And this is right there on the official United States government website. Colin Powell said, quote, he, referring to Saddam Hussein, he has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors. So, in effect, our policies have strengthened the security of the neighbors of Iraq, and these are policies that we are going to keep in place. Yep. And now he's saying, well, no, I didn't say he didn't have... That's all, folks. So we have this war on terror now. It's like the war on drugs. It's these phony wars. Yeah, there's bad guys out there. They are criminals. They don't own a nation. You can only declare war against a nation. I mean, look at the lessons that Italy learned with the Red Brigades, that Germany learned with their terrorists. I forget the name of the terrorist group there. That Greece learned with the November 17th or November 14th, whatever their terrorist group was. That England learned with the Irish Republican Army. That Spain is learning with the Basques. That Israel is learning with the Palestinians. When you try to do, when you respond to people who are saying, you know, wait a minute, pay attention to us, we have what we think is a legitimate grievance, and they use violence, when you respond to them as if they were an army, you empower them. When you respond to them as if they were criminals, you disempower them. And you can arrest and convict them. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Ms. Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why don't you put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number on this Radio Free Friday, 1-800-825-5937. And Jock in San Francisco is on the line. Jock, welcome. You are live and on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Great show as always.
Thank you.
Wanted to say that in reference to what you were talking to before, I think also if you treat people like people as opposed to criminals, as we witness in the war on drugs and other things, when we treat people like people as well as treat people like citizens or rather than consumers, then we get a little bit more out of the deal. We create dialogue and can move forward with actually the plurality that is the greatness of this country.
Yeah, you know, Jock, while most people are familiar with the Fourth Amendment, our right to privacy, most people don't remember what the Third Amendment was. And the Third Amendment really had to do with that exact issue. The Third Amendment says that you may not quarter, involuntarily quarter soldiers in people's homes. In other words, you can't come up to somebody's house and say, you have to give your extra bedroom to our soldiers. Because the British were doing that to the Americans, and it caused the Americans to feel like they were being dissed, like they were not being respected. And it really was this sense of, we're people too. You know, no matter what, even if we're an occupied colony, no matter what, even our own government will not be able to quarter soldiers in our own homes.
Exactly.
It has to do with the same. It's a worldview thing.
Exactly. And and it seems we've had a disconnect with that. And if we can get back out of this corporate mentality where we are just numbers on the bottom line as opposed to, you know, consumers, you know, I think we're basically being occupied every day by, you know, a lot of these larger interests that go beyond our country's borders and have completely evaporated anything resembling decency and ethics as witnessed with the WTO and things like that.
Yeah, these are foreign occupying forces, Jock. I mean, they literally are. I mean, you've got Halliburton reincorporating itself in the Bahamas or Bermuda so that it doesn't have to pay U.S. taxes, and then taking your money and mine to build cages in Guantanamo Bay to build a concentration camp down there. This is a foreign occupying force. We call them transnational corporations, and they are sucking the marrow out of the bones of America.
Exactly. Well, I guess the only bright light at the end of the tunnel is the fact that by sending all these extra reservists and guards folks over to Iraq and elsewhere, they're creating new Democrats. So take care, Tom. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, Jock. I appreciate the comment. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. 5937. Well said, Jock. I think not only are we creating Democrats, it's really a tragedy. It's really a tragedy what is happening to our young men and women in the service. They are being treated by, you know, George W. as if they were just, as if it was a game. You know, toy soldiers. He hasn't even attended a single funeral. When Bill Clinton was president and our young men and women died in action, and several of them did when he was president, he attended the funerals. George W. Bush attends vacations. Jim in Louisville's on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Sir, how are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better, Jim. How about you?
Very good. Listen, I was listening to this debate last evening, and something crossed my mind. You know, I've never heard these people, the candidates, ever mention one time all the homeless people in New York City after the attack. You know, there's thousands of people that have lost their jobs and are unemployed, and they're homeless. But not once have I heard anybody ever even mention them. You know, and these corporations, you know, they're moving offshore. They're managing these companies for quick build-up and of their assets or stock price, and they're managing for short-term gains instead of long-term health of a company.
Jim, I think you're on a roll here. You want to hold on over the break and finish your thought?
I'd better go. And could you just speak about some of those things after
the break?
Sure,
I would be glad to.
Thank you.
As soon as we get back from this break. Thank you for raising the topic, Jim. I appreciate it very much. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Discrimination against female employees of Walmart runs so rampant that a case against the retailer deserves class action status. That's what six female plaintiffs argued before a federal judge in San Francisco yesterday. If the plaintiffs are successful, they'll add over 1.5 million current and former women employees of Walmart to the case. Plaintiffs charge Walmart segregates department employees by gender and routinely favors men over women for raises and promotions. The suit seeks compensation for lost wages and an order to halt discriminatory practices.
Think the U.S. economy is causing pain across the populace? Think again. A new report from the Congressional Budget Office finds that the richest 1% of Americans have more money to spend now than they did 20 years ago. In fact, the top 1% have more money to spend after taxes than the entire bottom 40% of the American population. It's the largest disparity between rich and poor noted by the CBO since it began tracking the trend in 1979. This corresponds well with the release of the Forbes list of the richest 400 Americans. Even though stocks have been pummeled over the last 2 years and most have lost money, those who made the list saw their net worth increase by $955 billion.
Hospitals seeking to do no harm should first hire better trained nurses. That's the conclusion of a new University of Pennsylvania study that shows conclusively that hospital death rates go up as nurse education levels go down. Researchers found that patients undergoing surgery were twice as likely to die of complications in hospitals where the percentage of nurses with four-year bachelor's degrees was lower. A previous report conducted by the same researchers found that inadequate nurse staffing levels also contribute to thousands of preventable deaths each year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Of us. This is Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative here on the IE America Radio Network. And Jim in Louisville raised a good point. The con gets bigger even before the census data was made public. Says a story on the front page of today's New York Times. The title of the article being "Number of People Living in Poverty in U.S. Increases Again" by Kirk Semple. Even before the census data was made public, House Democrats accused the Bush administration of trying to hide bad economic news by releasing the numbers on a Friday rather than earlier in the week when people are not so distracted by the coming weekend and the rush to complete work. Representative Carolyn B. Maloney of New York told the Associated Press, "Sounds like they're trying to bury the numbers where people won't find them. This is another clear example of political manipulation of data by the Bush administration to avoid the glare of public scrutiny about the country's worsening economy." Well said, Representative Maloney. Now, what is the information? The poverty rate rose in 2002 to 12.1%. Now, what I find is interesting is they don't say when was the last time it was this high. Now, I honestly don't know. I haven't done the research on this. Maybe somebody in our chat room can quickly find out. But when was the last time the poverty rate in the United States was above 12%? It's 34.6 million human beings. That's enough people, 34.6 million people in poverty in the United States in the year 2002. They define poverty as earning less than $9,183 if you are an individual, or for a family of four, earning less than $18,392 per year. 16.7%. What is that, about one in six, would that be? One in seven, one in five? I just don't do math in my head that fast. One in five would be 20%. Yeah, so roughly one in six people younger than 18 years old. 16.7% of all individuals younger than 18 years in the United States are living in poverty. And there comes a time when we really have to ask ourselves the question, is this the kind of society that we want? Because it is something that is under our control. Now, the cons among us would say, well, they're just lazy. And, you know, I would say, I'm sorry, that's just quite simply not the case. I mean, it's just very much not the case. It's got nothing to do with lazy. It's got nothing to do with willing to work or not willing to work. Here's an email I received from, it's a copy, actually, of an email that was sent to a guest we had on the show earlier this week. from a fellow in Texas. He says, I've been out of work for 38 months. I drive around Dallas, Texas with a magnetic sign begging for work, as you can see in the attached photograph. According to conservative philosophy, I am just out of luck. Roadkill on the corporate superhighway. What does it say about a society that discards useful, productive people instead of doing everything possible to productively use all human capital? Further, what does it say about society that discards human capital with nary a bit of social support? Healthcare, forget it! I've not had access to healthcare for over 3 years. Dental care, forget it! I haven't had access to dental care in over 3 years. Social support mechanisms? Ha! Some would say I've not tried hard enough to find work. Yeah, right. So far, 1,426 resumes out the door. Resume posted on 105 job boards. Over-networked my remaining acquaintances. Worked two jobs for free in hopes of a paying position. The result? Snake eyes. Nada. Zilch. The problem, as I see it, is simple. Conservative social philosophy breaks down when a society is under stress. So under social conservative philosophy, what am I to do? The message from society is clear. Become homeless and rummage through garbage cans, as that is the course of events. Too bad that you have two college degrees. This is a guy with two college degrees. Too bad that you served as an officer in the United States military. This guy served as an officer in our armed services. Too bad that you are a commercial pilot with a pilot's license. We don't need you. Go die. And then he says, further, the things that I am good at are slowly being outsourced under the free trade banner. As we just heard in that conversation with the folks at IBM. So we see the poverty rate going up, and what kind of system, how have countries historically dealt with poverty? What is the rational way to deal with poverty? Do we just hand people money? I think that would be a terrible mistake. I think that we had successes and failures in the New Deal and the Great Society, and we have learned from them. One of the things that we learned from the New Deal, from the WPA and other projects like that, is that when unemployment reaches a critical point where people like Mark, whose letter I just read to you, cannot find work and are reaching points of despair, that when that happens, the government should become the employer of last resort. And people say, oh, wait a minute, that's socialism. No, it's not. And in fact, that has been the history of civilization for thousands of years. The way that the government has become the employer of last resort has historically been through the military. People who can find no other work and are young enough join the military. And countries, and it goes all the way back to medieval Europe, it goes back to Roman times. Young people who couldn't find work during economic downturns, the army ballooned. And then you get this big army, so they got to have a war to justify it. And to try and break that cycle, we created the United Nations. And we said, we're not going to have war be the thing that triggers employer of last resort status for our nations. In fact, that's what Roosevelt said, Franklin Roosevelt. And so instead he said, you know, we have needs in the United States. We need to have roads built. We need bridges built. We need quality of life. We need to encourage our artists, our musicians, our poets. These are dimensions of society that we need to recognize and that have value as well. And historically, those groups were supported, again, by government as an employer of last resort. Mozart was everybody wanted to be the musician to the king. Royal courts traditionally supported musicians and poets and playwrights. And so Roosevelt said one of the ways to deal with poverty, when poverty reaches a certain terrible threshold, is that we, the government, shall become the employer of last resort. Now, the Bush administration has put a spin on this. First of all, they haven't quite acknowledged it. They're unwilling to say this. But then secondly, they say, well, okay, if we are going to become the employer of last resort, that is, if we're going to create jobs, have government, because essentially government doesn't create jobs, businesses do. Businesses, however, depend upon government to provide the atmosphere and the stability, the social stability, the economic stability in which jobs can work, and the trade stability that will allow people to start businesses and know that they're not going to be run out of business by somebody importing a product from China. So what the cons have done is they've said, okay, to the extent that the government is going to be the employer of last resort, that we're going to do things through the government, and in fact the government has expanded larger and more rapidly under George W. Bush than any other administration in history. And you will hear them in 2004 saying they've reduced the size of government, but the way that they've done this is a slick accounting trick, is they bring in private corporations and they say, okay, you guys do the work the government employees used to do. And you can skim some of the fat off the top. You can take some of the profit and put it in your back pocket. Don't forget us, by the way. We are going to show up on your door and ask for a campaign contribution. And so the statistics look like there are fewer and fewer government employees. There are. But the reality is that the government is spending more and more money to get jobs done. And the money's going to Halliburton and companies like it, these government contractors. So anyhow, back to the original question, how do we deal with poverty in the United States? What is an appropriate way to deal with poverty? And after thousands of years of experimenting with this and figuring out that making the army the employer of last resort only led to wars, and figuring out from Dickensian, you know, Victorian England and the terrible times of history, and the Great Depression, that simply adopting a Herbert Hoover hands-off policy, we'll do nothing, doesn't work. You can't leave it to the private sector, I'm sorry. The private sector is not concerned with issues of poverty. The private sector is very good at making money. God bless them. We need people making money in the United States. We need successful businesses in the United States. We need more small and medium-sized businesses in the United States because they make the most jobs. But right across the board, I'm all in favor of business. But we have to face the reality that by law, if you run a corporation, you are obligated to create shareholder wealth, to increase shareholder value, to make a profit. That's your job. Your job isn't to take care of the poor. Your job isn't even to create jobs. It's to make money. So there has to be a role for us, we the people, collectively in this. We get together and we say, okay, what are we going to do about this? What can we do? And the mistake that LBJ made with the Great Society, in my opinion, was saying, well, what we can do is we can just hand people cash. Now, certainly there were big parts of the Great Society that were not just cash giveaways. But there were parts of it that were, and they created an entrenched class of the poor. Just as laissez-faire economics, just as trickle-down economics creates an entrenched class of the extremely rich. As Carol Moseley Brown last night in the debate said it so eloquently, we have created an entrenched rich class and poor class, and now the middle class is being wiped out. So, for example, with housing, Habitat for Humanity, they build houses and give them to people, or sell them to people at a very, very low cost so that people actually have a sense of ownership. One of the conservatives, I forget who it was, I think it might have been William Crystal, made a great observation. It's a brilliant quote. He said, never in the history of the world has anybody ever washed a rental car. And you wonder why public housing looks terrible. Why not help people own their own houses? Own their own housing. You know, this is one of the changes. And how do you do that? You give them meaningful work. Well, how can you give them meaningful work if the employers are not creating the jobs? Well, then government becomes the employer of last resort. There are so many things that are desperately needed to be done in the United States. Our roads are falling apart. We need research and development programs to develop new technologies to wean us off oil. We need more people teaching in our schools. We have average classroom sizes in a lot of communities of 30, 40, 50 kids in a classroom. And every bit of research shows, setting aside that phony study that they trotted out during the No Child Left Behind thing that showed no difference between 30 kids and 40 kids. Yeah, maybe. But you get down to 20 kids in a classroom, and you're going to see a huge difference in the ability of those children to learn. I say this as the founder of a private school, the Hunter School in Rumney, New Hampshire, www.hunterschool.org. We started 7 years ago a private school for children with learning disabilities. And when you get a small enough classroom, any child can learn just about anything. We have a desperate need for this in the United States. The government could be the employer of last resort for this. Oh, but we'd have to increase taxes. Yes. See, that's the thing. We have to decide what kind of world is it that we want to live in. We know that Rush Limbaugh doesn't mind millions of people living in poverty. We know that the very wealthy among us can insulate themselves adequately from the ravages of poverty. But the vast majority of us would prefer to live in a world that's a little more egalitarian, thank you very much. The cons say, oh, we are the most compassionate of all. We are saying people should have opportunities to work, and that's a good thing. Yeah, sure, nice talk. But you look at their policies and you discover it's a lie. Yes, there should be opportunity. There absolutely must be opportunity. People must have something to do. And if the private sector can't provide it, then we the people should, at least over the short term. We really need to be reexamining the practices and the doctrines that Franklin Roosevelt brought to this nation, because there were some great ideas in there. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, putting the con back in conservative. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really missed the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready.
not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Show. An email here from Janie. Janie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina, who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Janie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature, one word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh? You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, two, four, and you.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Discussing solutions and not false promises, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia. Engineered in Detroit by Steph Stryker and Jay Balicki. And so now you know that. Get that out. Anyhow, we had a couple of callers on the line here real quickly. Tim in Santa Fe. Tim and Terry in California is on the line. We've only got about 3 minutes left in the show. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What are your thoughts?
Well, thank you. One of my thoughts were is I think we should try to take the greed out of the military industrial complex and make it a nonprofit entity of the United States government.
Well, that's how it used to be with hospitals. You know, hospitals and health insurance companies like Blue Cross used to be required by law to be nonprofits. Another way to do it would be to say that defense contractors, if they're going to be in the defense industry, they have to abide by the same rules the U.S. military does, which is that the top general can't make more than 20 times what the lowest private makes.
Oh, I think
good
that
idea,
would be
Tim.
Incredible. And the greed thing, it reminds me of, you know, hearing about the toilet seats for, you know, $1,000 or the hammers for $1,000. You know, that's partly the military fault, but I think it's also the corporate fault for being so greedy.
There you go. Tim, thanks for the comment. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK. Yes, Terry in California is on the line. Terry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Terry.
Thank you so much for your show and for being such a fine mind on the airwaves in this time of plight that we're in.
And, well, thank you.
I've got a couple of points I'd like to make. One of them is about this term compassionate conservative or compassionate anything. To me, it's so at a distance. It's, the definition says feeling or showing compassion, sympathetic, pity. I don't like that term. I don't think it's a very valid way to express somebody that doesn't have any action to it.
When compassionate conservatism is an oxymoron, Terry.
Okay, thank you.
It's an inherent contradiction, you know.
I know. I just hate to hear it. The other thing is I didn't know until yesterday that that JFK said something 10 days before he was assassinated that was very telling. I don't know if you've heard this quote or not, but let me quote it to you. It says, "The high office of the president has been used to form in a plot to destroy the American's freedom, and before I leave office, I must inform the citizen of his plight." Did you know he said that at Columbia University 10 days before he got shot?
Yeah, I've read that. I'm not sure how accurate it is, but it may well be. I have read that in a couple of places. Terry, thanks for sharing that, and thanks for your kind comments about the show. The music means we're at the end of the program here, so I'm sorry to be stepping on you here verbally. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Truth in Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll talk to you then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Anna?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.